We're 30 days away from the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, June 9th and Saturday, June 10th in Collinsville, Illinois. Register today at issuesetc.org.
This administration has now removed several law enforcement officials in a position to conduct independent investigations of the president and his administration, from Acting Attorney General Sally Yates to Preet Bharara, and now Jim Comey.
That's what we have now, Mr. President. Our Democratic colleagues complaining about the removal of an FBI director whom they themselves repeatedly and sharply criticized.
That's Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer and Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell reacting to the president's firing of FBI Director James Comey. Of course, it's not the first time a president has fired an FBI director, but it is a big deal. And I wonder, beyond what the consequences might be, the media's reaction has been, well, kind of over the top. We're going to be talking about that and the House passage of a health care bill. Mark Hemingway of the Weekly Standard joins us on this Wednesday afternoon, May the 10th. Mark is a regular guest and he's senior writer for the Weekly Standard based in Washington, D.C. Mark, welcome back to Issues Etc.
As always, glad to be back.
Before we talk about the reasons behind and then the long-term effect of firing James Comey, FBI director, what do you make of the media's reaction to President Trump's termination of the FBI director?
Well, when it comes to big news politically, it's a good idea to, you know, remain calm until we have all the information and assess the situation dispassionately. And that's doubly true of all things involving Trump, I think. As we've seen, the media are kind of unable to help themselves and in terms of overreacting to everything that Trump does. And in this particular case, you know, I'm not saying that there may not be things that come out about the Comey firing that are deeply troubling, scandalous, whatever. But given the information that we know thus far, the media overreaction to it has just been, I mean, it's been pretty amazing to behold. I mean, they're just sort of losing it. But, you know, in fairness, this is being fueled in part by the fact that the Democratic Party is also, for both self-interested and their own sort of, you know, sense of hysteria, are losing it too. And we had the Democratic senator from Hawaii tweeting out last night that this was a full-blown, quote, constitutional crisis. And whatever this is, you know, is well within Trump's constitutional power to fire Comey. So I'm not sure we are at a constitutional crisis just yet.
I'm wondering about, if you explain it to me, because you're the guy who walks those streets of Washington, D.C.
Right.
How can the Democratic Party, and then I think we are fair to say many of those voices that are being echoed in the media, how do they do such an immediate U-turn on Comey, blaming him for Hillary Clinton's loss, saying he's incompetent and all of those things, and then crying to the high heavens when Donald Trump cans him?
Well, I mean, I think the obvious point here is that it would be unhelpful to Trump to portray this as, you know, some sort of, you know, venal attempt to prevent himself from being investigated when we all know he's you know, secretly corrupt. And or secretly in bed with Russia, you know, even worse, you know, he's a traitor. And the Comey thing is interesting here because it seems to me that if Comey, you know, was, you know, neck deep in some major investigation of Trump and Russia and, you know, presumably would be the guy that, like, knew all the things that were going on in the investigation, why would canning him, where he's free to go out and say all of the horrible things that he knows about Trump, you know, be the thing to do? It just doesn't make sense. You know, another good rule of thumb for looking at things in Washington is, you know, never assume malevolence when, you know, incompetence will suffice. And whatever you say about what happened yesterday, I mean, I'm not exactly shedding any tears for the loss of Comey. I mean, I think that he tried to be an honorable public servant, but he made tons of mistakes along the way. I don't think any person of either party can look at what he did over the past year and say that he handled himself, you know, well. He was constantly trying to not appear political, so he was constantly trying to sort of look at the situation and try and find a way to split the baby in two, and just kept, you know, hacking the baby into pieces in front of everybody, with everybody screaming, "What are you doing?" And so, you know, I just think that we need to hold our horses here before we, you know, go rushing off and saying that this is a dramatic attempt by Trump to keep himself from being investigated. I mean, I think that there is a legitimate criticism here, is that Trump didn't handle this in what would call a professional manner. I mean, supposedly the story is that, you know, Comey thought it was a joke when he's being told this. He was 3,000 miles away in Los Angeles. It was already public and all over television at the time Comey had been told about this. Whatever you want to say about Comey being bad for the job and whether or not he should have been, you know, canned, you know, months ago, you know, treating the guy with a certain amount of dignity befitting his position in terms of firing him, you know, would have been the right thing to do. And I think the abruptness has bred a lot of the suspicion involving the way this, you know, involving Trump's hidden motivations that may or may not be there.
So in terms of intended or unintended consequences, does it simply fuel the fire of those who now, at least for during the Trump era, live in kind of a constantly swirling theory of conspiracy with regard to the president?
Oh, I'm sure that's exactly what's going on here. I mean, just because they got rid of Comey does not mean the Russian investigation is going away. And with Comey out of there, the guy who's, you know, the acting head of the FBI is, I believe, was it Andrew McCabe is his name? You know, his wife ran for Congress, and Hillary Clinton and the Democratic governor of Virginia did fundraisers for her. You know, that's not the person you put in charge of the FBI if you're worried about what the FBI is going to do to you. You know, there's just a lot of stuff here that doesn't add up. I think the most logical reason here is that the Trump administration was flying from the seat of its pants once again, and, you know, totally underestimated the political and media reaction to this. And, you know, frankly, you know, that doesn't justify the overreaction, but, you know, at this point in time, you'd think they would have some sort of sense of how people are going to react whenever they do things that are abruptly and aren't telegraphed and, you know, could be interpreted, you know, poorly, even if it's unfair.
And finally, it should be pointed out that President Trump is not the first president to show an FBI director the door, is he?
No. Clinton fired the FBI director. You know, and ideally, FBI directors are insulated from politics. That's why they're given 10-year terms here. But it's always been a heavily politicized agency. You know, heaven knows the FBI's been rife with the abuses going back to the J. Edgar Hoover days. So, you know, politics are unavoidably part of the job. You know, in an ideal world, you know, rule of law would be enforced strictly at the FBI. But whatever you want to say about Comey's tenure, I don't think even-handedness and rule of, you know, and strictly enforcing the rule of law are necessarily going to be what he's remembered for.
Let's turn to the subject of the GOP health care bill. This was intended, at least according to President Trump's promises, to be a repeal and a replace of Obamacare. Were both of those boxes sufficiently checked?
No, absolutely not. I mean, for better or for worse, it appears that, you know, massive elements of Obamacare, like the Medicaid expansion and other things like that, are going to be with us for a long time. This is one of the sort of the genius behind Obamacare. They knew that even if, you know, Democratic politicians threw themselves off of their careers off of buildings in order to get it passed, they knew that, you know, in terms of, you know, furthering their sort of, you know, liberal policy goals in terms of furthering the interests of the party, it would be served to a large degree to some extent because they've created this massive constituency that can no longer be denied. I mean, once you, you know, start handing out large checks to people, you know, en masse, it's very hard to say you're not going to get those checks anymore politically. And that's the situation the GOP finds themselves in. On the other hand, I'm sort of appalled by the lack of preparation for this moment. I mean, the GOP campaigned for years and years and years on repeal and replace. They didn't have a plan that they were united around, ready to go. Now, that was fine when they were in the minority and they knew that there was no chance of anything being passed. But, you know, they've known at least since November of last year they were going to have to do something and do something almost immediately. So, you know, they should have had sufficient time given the amount of ideas and replacement plans and other things that have been kicking around in this town for years to get their act together and get something that they, you know, agreed on. Instead, they fought like cats and dogs, and it just was not a good look for the party. So, you know, and the other thing about it is they just didn't have good pushback for all the criticism that was inevitably going to be involved. You know, they're there are always trade-offs whenever you do health care in particular and large bills like this. And people were screaming bloody murder about all the innocent victims of, you know, there were all the cancer patients that were going to lose health insurance and all of these horrible sob stories. Well, the reality is the passage of Obama also involved all kinds of sob stories in terms of people losing their insurance and having negative health outcomes and all of that. You know, unfortunately for the GOP, they're in a situation where the media is overwhelmingly liberal and they're going to side with, you know, whatever, you know, negative version of events, I think, that Democrats decide to run with. But again, they should have been prepared for that. They should have known they were going to have a great PR strategy to push back against, you know, all of this, you know, accusations that they were heartless. And they just were caught flat-footed on both the policy front and the public relations front. And they should have done a lot better.
So one of the criticisms that we're hearing both in the media and from politicians is that the House's health care bill will fail to cover people with pre-existing conditions. As far as you can tell, is that true?
No. They've taken specific efforts to deal with that. The reality with the pre-existing conditions thing is it's been a problem in the healthcare system for sure. But the number of people that have these, you know, fatal pre-existing conditions such that they can't be insured, or the insurance companies are immediately unwilling to insure them is typically small. I mean, if you just segregated those people out of the regular insurance pool population and, you know, paid for their health insurance outright, that would be much better for the system than trying to find some sort of way to incorporate them into the system such that you and I and other, you know, relatively healthy people are paying through the nose for people that have astronomically high health costs relative to normally healthy people. You know, and there were certain specific media sob stories that were trotted out for this. Jimmy Kimmel, the host of the talk show on ABC, told this big sob story about, you know, how his son was born with a heart defect in some cases, and about how, you know, this would have been a pre-existing condition and how awful it was Republicans, you know, would have let, you know, babies die. I mean, I think PolitiFact, or one of the fact-checking organizations, again, not inclined to be fair for Republicans, looked into this and found there was, like, almost no evidence that this was ever the case. I mean, you know, it's just the American healthcare system does not let, you know, babies born with heart defects just, you know, die on the table. It's just not what we do. Again, it would be nice if there were some rational discourse, some level-headedness brought to the table on this issue. You know, you look at the cold, hard economic reality of what would be necessary to treat people with pre-existing conditions rather than, you know, screw up the entire healthcare system.
Mark Hemingway is our guest. We're talking about the House passage of a health care bill. Speaking of economic reality, we'll talk about concerns over costs of the new House bill right after this.
LCMS Disaster Response provides guidance and assistance to congregations who seek to proclaim the gospel and show mercy in the wake of disasters. We can bring capacity to your congregation through on-site assessment, volunteer training and congregation preparedness, and through grants direct to your congregation. For more information, follow us on Facebook, keyword LCMS Disaster Response, or visit our website at lcms.org/disaster. That's lcms.org/disaster.
Did you know that Luther Academy has been providing continuing education for confessional Lutheran pastors and laypeople worldwide for more than 20 years? Luther Academy publishes Logia, the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatics series, and Luther Digest. Find out more about Luther Academy and sign up to receive their free email newsletter at lutheracademy.com, lutheracademy.com, and like them on Facebook, facebook.com/lutheracademy.
There's a dangerous movement in evangelicalism known as the New Apostolic Reformation, and they literally claim that in the past few decades, God has restored apostles and prophets to the church.
Chris Roseborough talking about his presentation at this summer's Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
In my presentation, I'll be making the case against modern-day apostles and prophets. As part of the presentation, we'll be talking about who's teaching this ecclesiology, the inherent dangers of it, but also what's at the root of it, and that is a false understanding of the baptism of the Holy Spirit.
You can meet and hear Chris Roseborough making the case against modern-day prophets and apostles Friday, June 9th and Saturday, June 10th at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference in Collinsville, Illinois. For more information, visit issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Christ Academy has been the most formative experience as I study to be a pastor. Hi, I'm Ian Kinney. I attended Christ Academy as a student, and now I work there as a proctor. You'll learn theology from seminary professors, have fellowship with other young men, hear God's word, and receive the sacrament in beautiful Kramer Chapel. Christ Academy, June 18th through July the 1st at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana. If you're a high school man, visit ctsfw.edu/Christ Academy. ctsfw.edu/Christ Academy.
College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois offers ACT, SAT, and PSAT test prep, scholarship application classes, college and career counseling, and more. Hi, this is Lori Konski, president of College Preparation Station. We have helped our students obtain more than $7 million in tuition scholarships in 12 years. Find out more at cpsprep.com. Let us help you create a vision and find your future. The College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois, cpsprep.com.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Mark Hemingway is our guest. We're talking about the House passage of a health care bill. It's being called Trump Care already. I guess that's fair since the previous one was Obamacare. Mark is senior writer for the Weekly Standard based in Washington, D.C. Mark, let's talk a little bit about cost. You mentioned the financial reality before the break. I think the basic question, whether it's a person without health care or whether it's a person with health care, with insurance, will I be able to afford it? Especially, we've seen years in the past where insurance rates for health care have gone up 25%.
Right. And remember, Obama made very specific promises about the amount of money Obamacare would lower each American's premiums. I mean, it was a significant amount. Premiums were supposed to, were supposed to go down by, like $2,500 a year for a family policy. Now, don't quote me on that, but I think that was the figure that they threw out. I mean, it was a significant amount of money. Instead, they went up by thousands of dollars. And further, the secondary effects of this, of constantly rising healthcare costs, are having all sorts of negative consequences for the economy. One reason why salaries haven't been rising is because your employer is keeping your salary the same, but constantly absorbing any money he might be inclined to pay you in increased salary by, having to cover your increasing healthcare costs. And again, people aren't dealing with the reality of how bad Obamacare was in terms of, keeping, failing to contain costs and, in fact, making health insurance more expensive. So, again, it would be nice if the GOP were, ready and willing to point this stuff out, and I think it would make people more sympathetic for attempts to try and do something different to reform the healthcare system. But, the other fact of the matter is that unless you are going to embrace a single-payer healthcare system, which has, a whole other set of problems, where the government guarantees your health care, you're inevitably going to be involved in some sort of risk, financially or otherwise, with insurance. And people are just politically, at this point in time, unwilling to accept that that's going to be the case, that you're going to incur unexpected financial costs as a result of health problems. And I'm sorry, I mean, I think that there are big trade-offs there, but I think that the trade-offs for having, a private health insurance system in terms of availability and accessibility of care and the innovation that it creates in terms of improving, healthcare procedures is worth it relative to, living in Canada where, yes, it's true, the government will pay for all your healthcare costs, but there are more MRI machines in all of Pittsburgh than the entire nation of Canada.
I guess in that vein, it was 30 years ago this month, my late uncle, who was a physician, telling me at my wedding reception, if I'm not mistaken, we will have socialized healthcare. We have state-run healthcare. Now, his reasoning had to do with the insurance companies and the rising cost of insurance, and he said politically, eventually, it's going to get to the point where people will just demand it. He didn't think it was a great idea, but that was his prediction. Politically, Mark, are we lurching toward a one-payer system?
Well, first off, congratulations on being married 30 years. But secondarily, I think that he was a very wise man because that looks exactly where it's headed right now. One of the sort of negative side effects, in my opinion, of the current populist moment with Trump is that, people aren't thinking in terms of conservative ideology governing policy in the Republican Party as much as they used to. And they're, in fact, rejecting that. And, and you're seeing this in all sorts of, key ways. Trump by pandering to voters, promised not to touch Social Security or Medicare. Never mind that the financial problems these programs are creating are so massive and so inevitable and unavoidable that something's going to have to be done about that. It's the same thing with socialized medicine. You know, people aren't willing to make the intellectual small government case to voters, you know, about healthcare innovation, about, you know, healthcare accessibility relative to Canada or other places like that. So, you know, you end up with a situation where people are like, well, why shouldn't the government pay for it if that's why, you know, that's the way every other country does it? And in fact, just in the last, like, you know, 6 months, a year or so, you're starting to see polls where I think even where a plurality of even, you know, nominally Republican voters are supportive of single-payer healthcare. So, yeah, I think that, you know, who knows, we might avoid it for one reason or another, simply because the lobbying mechanisms involved in either the pharmaceutical industry or the insurance industry or, you know, these are big businesses and, you know, they might be able to stop it from happening. You know, they have their own negative agendas too, but certainly it looks like people are trending that way toward being much more supportive of single-payer health care than you would have imagined even, you know, 5 years ago.
Again, kind of an old perspective on it, but it was Ronald Reagan who was talking about healthcare reform even when he was running for president and serving as president, who at one time, if I recall correctly, suggested that we insure our health the same way we insure our house or our car. I don't expect my insurance to pay for my oil change.
Right.
But when I wreck the car, I want gold-plated, platinum-covered coverage to cover everything. And he talked about catastrophic health care, where no one should ever fear that if they get a disease that's going to bankrupt them, that they will be bankrupted. Is that even a possibility anymore with people expecting their copays to be under $20?
Well, I mean, that is what makes the most sense. I mean, like I said, the problem here is you have to go out and make the intellectual and economic case to people, to show them that, you know, this is, you know, there are ways out there that you won't have to worry. Your health will be taken care of, but you're going to have to assume some sort of financial risk. And relative to the costs you would pay otherwise, either through taxes in a socialized system, never mind the fact that you're going to be put on waiting lists for months if we end up like Canada, people need to understand that there are options and alternatives there. You know, and the car example is a great, you know, great example. It's just, you know, we ended up in this weird system where we had employer-based health care, and for a long time, you know, the economics of the country in terms of demographics and I both the limited technology we had and other things like that made it such that, you know, extending people's lives with expensive procedures and stuff just wasn't possible. So there wasn't a lot of money flowing in and out of the healthcare system to the degree it was now. So we tend to think of health insurance as a thing that should take care of, you know, every ailment. Whereas you're right, we never look at that. You know, the idea that my auto insurance policy should cover wiper blade replacements is absurd. But that's exactly what our, you know, health insurance policies look like. You know, it would make more sense to tell every, you know, American family to, like, have a health savings account where you can cover up to $5,000 worth of, you know, healthcare costs should you need to, out of your own pocket, but you'll pay a lot less insurance premiums over time, so you'll, you know, always be prepared. Catastrophic care makes a lot of sense.
Finally, let's talk about defunding of Planned Parenthood in the GOP healthcare bill. What exactly happened there?
This is a good, I don't know what the latest is. I think the latest thing I saw was that within the bill there was a provision to defund Planned Parenthood for 1 year or something like that. To be perfectly honest, I think that Republicans should probably just pull this out of the healthcare bill itself and, you know, pass it on their own. But, you know, again, the fact that they haven't chosen to do that sort of speaks to a certain degree of cowardice on the issue of abortion and Planned Parenthood particularly. And I don't understand it. I mean, one thing if they're passing some sort of, like, sweeping pro-choice legislation, but, you know, the idea that my tax dollars should go to perform, you know, abortions at, you know, private Planned Parenthood clinics isn't exactly a controversial or politically unpopular one, except for the fact that Planned Parenthood has an amazing PR machine, and Republicans are just afraid of, you know, the number of bad headlines they're going to get from Planned Parenthood and the sympathetic press that repeats everything that they say. But I really think that if you just stood up, did it, weathered the storm for 2 or 3 days, you know, and then everyone realizes that, you know, a large majority of the American public supports the idea that tax dollars should not be paying for, you know, private abortions, then, you know, and just moved on. But it's kind of sad that's the Republicans are haven't been more courageous on this issue.
Will this bill get through the Senate in some form and make it to Donald Trump's desk?
Well, I have no idea. Let me tell you that the odds of this bill making it through the Senate and getting before Donald Trump to sign anytime soon went down dramatically yesterday. One of the big, you know, silly things about scandals like the Comey scandals, they sort of like this town can't really walk and chew gum at the same time. So if all the oxygen, you know, in terms of, you know, media coverage and time is being sucked up with, you know, Comey 24 hours a day, then it's going to make it hard to do, you know, sort of nuts and bolts legislative stuff. And then there's the issue of the fact that the bill that passed through the House, while better than the first bill they passed, still has major problems. And at that point, the House was, I think, just passing something to say that they would pass something and knowing that this would be punted to the Senate, who would then have to get in there and fix whatever the big problems are. So it was a victory that the House passed something, but it's a far cry from winning the war on health care reform.
Mark Hemingway, senior writer for the Weekly Standard based in Washington, D.C. You can read his columns at issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand and follow Mark on Twitter at Heminator. That's at HEMINATOR. Mark, thank you.
Thanks again.
On the other side of the break, we're going to talk about an AP story from Vatican City. Vatican celebrates Big Bang to dispel faith-science conflict, the Vatican's attempt to affirm both creation and the Big Bang. Dr. Danny Faulkner of Answers in Genesis will be our guest. How did one of the world's most famous atheists become one of its most famous Christians? Find out in the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for May, From Atheism to Christianity, The Story of C.S. Lewis. It's written by regular guest Dr. Joel Heck. From Atheism to Christianity is published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040, or browse before you buy at issuesetc.org. From Atheism to Christianity.
Memoria Press invites all Issues Etc. listeners to explore our Simply Classical curriculum, a set of full-year academic curriculum packages for children with learning challenges. Our classical writing program and our Christian studies are now based on your favorite CPH Bible storybooks. To learn more, visit classicalspecialneeds.com and use promo code LPR to save on your initial purchase. That's classicalspecialneeds.com.
Smartest listeners in radio. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Are you tired of working nights, weekends, and odd hours trying to cover your bases at home just to make ends meet? At the Cleaning Authority, we call that the multi-job shuffle, and we want to end that for you right now. We'll train you in our proven, efficient cleaning methods, and you'll be partnered to work in pre-qualified homes. Call 314-416-8117 and walk away from the multi-job shuffle with a future in our St. Louis office, 314-416-8117.
Would you like to help a college or seminary student attend the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference? You can purchase a conference scholarship for a contribution of $120 to Issues Etc. You can donate online at issuesetc.org/scholarship, or you can make your $120 check payable to Issues Etc., write scholarship in the memo line, and send it to Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234.